Bill W. published a July 1953 Grapevine article titled A Fragment of History, describing the origin of the 12 Steps. He identified the three main channels of inspiration for the 12 Steps as Dr. William D. Silkworth, William James, and the Oxford Group. Dr. William D. Silkworth is central to the Big Book chapter, The Doctor's Opinion. He was the medical director of Towns Hospital in 1934 when Bill W. sobered up there after four admissions. We'll get to Dr. Silkworth's specific influence on the steps in Big Book in just a few slides. Harvard professor William James presented the Gifford Lecture Series on Natural Religion in 1901 at the University of Aberdeen in Edinburgh, Scotland. His lectures were published in 1902 in a critically acclaimed book titled The Varieties of Religious Experience, A Study in Human Nature. 32 years later, a copy of the book was given to Bill W. during his last stay in Towns Hospital. It strongly influenced Bill and early AA members and is mentioned in the Big Book. James is mentioned twice in the Big Book by name. He is also called the founding father of American psychology. Lutheran minister Frank Bookman attended the Keswick Convention of Evangelicals in England in 1908. He had a profound conversion experience and helped another attendee to go through the same experience. Returning to the United States, Bookman began working out principles that he later applied on a global scale. His evangelical movement was called the First Century Christian Fellowship, and in the 1920s it was renamed to the Oxford Group, and in 1938 renamed again to Moral Rearmament, or MRA. In 2001, MRA was renamed to Initiatives of Change, but today it bears virtually no similarity to its early roots. Core Oxford Group principles consisted primarily of the four absolutes of honesty, unselfishness, purity, and love. The Oxford Group gave AA the term sharing. They were also strong advocates of self-examination, admission of character defects, amends for harm done, and working in service with others. In early 1918, Sam Shoemaker met Frank Bookman in Beijing, China, and he too had a spiritual conversion experience and became a devoted member of Bookman's movement. In 1925, Shoemaker became rector of the Calvary Episcopal Church in New York City, and he assumed a leadership role in the Oxford Group. The Oxford Group's United States headquarters were set up at Calvary House, a building immediately next to the church. One more accomplishment of Shoemaker was the Calvary Rescue Mission. Bill W. wrote a January 1963 Grapevine article regarding his exchange of letters with Dr. Carl Gustav Jung. Bill informed Dr. Jung that his past treatment of an alcoholic patient in the early 1930s was, quote, the first in the chain of events that led to the founding of AA. The alcoholic patient was Roland H. He was treated by Dr. Jung in Zurich, Switzerland, in either the late 1920s or early 1930s. After returning to drinking, Roland was told by Dr. Jung that there was no medical or psychological hope for an alcoholic of his type, that his only hope was a vital spiritual or religious experience. Roland found sobriety and he became a prominent member of the Oxford Group and a vestryman of the Calvary Episcopal Church in New York City. He later moved to Bennington, Vermont. AA's Oxford Group seeds were sown in Akron, Ohio, 4 years before Bill W. sobered up. Russell Bud Firestone was the son of business tycoon Harvey S. Firestone, Sr. In 1931, Bud was drinking a fifth or more of whiskey a day. James Newton, a Firestone executive and Oxford Group member, introduced Bud to Sam Shoemaker. Bud spiritually surrendered with Shoemaker, and he was released from his alcohol obsession and joined the Oxford Group. Harvey S. Firestone, Sr., grateful for the help given to his son Bud, funded an Oxford Group conference at Akron's Mayflower Hotel in January 1933. Firestone and Reverend Walter Tunks met Frank Bookman and his team at the train station. The event was widely publicized and attracted some notable names in AA history, such as Henrietta Seiberling, T. Henry and Clarice Williams, and Dr. Bob's wife, Anne, who later persuaded Dr. Bob to attend Oxford Group meetings as well. By the autumn of 1933, Bill W. was quite literally drinking himself to death. In desperation, his wife Lois turned to their brother-in-law, Dr. Leonard B. Strong, for help, and he arranged and paid for Bill's first admission to Towns Hospital. Dr. Strong was married to Bill's sister, Dorothy. In July 1934, Ebbie T. was approached in Manchester, Vermont by two old drinking friends and now sober Oxford Group members, Sebra G. and Shep C. They informed Ebbie of the Oxford Group, but Ebbie was not quite ready yet to stop drinking. Sebra and Shep later vacationed at Roland H.'s house in Bennington, Vermont, and they learned that Ebbie was facing criminal charges and possible commitment to an asylum because of his drinking. Roland and Sebra attended Ebbie's trial, and they persuaded the judge, who just happened to be Sebra's father, to parole Ebbie to their custody. While in Vermont, Roland introduced Ebbie to the Oxford Group, and he later took him to Calvary Rescue Mission in New York City. In late November, Ebbie, who was a boyhood friend of Bill W. and his wife Lois, heard about Bill's drinking problem and phoned Lois, who invited him over for dinner. Ebbie visited Bill and shared his recovery experience in the Oxford Group, which is described in the Big Book chapter, Bill's Story. Lois recalled that Ebbie visited several times, once staying for dinner. Bill W. had two more admissions to Towns Hospital in July and September 1934. Following Ebbie's visits, Bill entered Towns Hospital for the fourth time on December 11, 1934, and that is Bill's sobriety date. Bill later fell into a deep depression and had a profound spiritual experience, which he later jokingly called his hot flash experience. Fearing that he had gone crazy, he summoned Dr. Silkworth, who told Bill to hang on to what he had experienced because it seemed so much better than what he came into the hospital with. While in the hospital, Bill read William James's book, The Varieties of Religious Experience, and found it deeply inspiring. It revealed three key points for recovery. First, the need for a complete defeat in a vital area of life, or what we today call hitting bottom. The second was the admission of defeat, or what we today call acceptance. And third, an appeal for higher power for help, or what we today call surrender. These spiritual principles later became the basis for steps 1, 2, and 3. After Bill left the hospital, he and his wife Lois went to Oxford Group meetings at Calvary House. Bill worked with alcoholics at the Calvary Rescue Mission and Towns Hospital, emphasizing his hot flash experience. Alcoholic Oxford Group members also began meeting at his home on Clinton Street in Brooklyn. In March 1935, Henrietta Seiberling arranged a weekly Oxford Group meeting at the home of T. Henry and Clarence Williams in Akron, Ohio. Its purpose was to help Dr. Bob stop drinking, but Dr. Bob could not stop, no matter how hard or how much he tried. After a few months of having no success and sobering up other alcoholics, Bill W. came very close to giving up on his efforts. However, his wife Lois reminded him that he was staying sober because of his working with others. In April 1935, Bill had a talk with Dr. Silkworth, who advised him to stop preaching about his hot flash experience in the hospital and hit the alcoholics hard with the medical view on alcoholism. Silkworth advised Bill to break down the strong egos of alcoholics by telling them about the obsession that condemned them to drink and the allergy that condemned them to go mad or die. It would then be so much easier to get them to accept the spiritual solution. Bill returned to Wall Street, and he was hired to lead a proxy fight for control of the National Rubber Machinery Company in Akron, Ohio. Bill went to Akron in May 1935, but the proxy fight was quickly lost. In poor spirits and tempted to enter the hotel bar, Bill realized he needed another alcoholic. He phoned clergy members listed on the hotel lobby directory and eventually reached the Reverend Walter Tunks. Bill was put in touch with Henrietta Seiberling, and after meeting Bill at her home, she viewed his arrival as the answer to her prayers for Dr. Bob and called Dr. Bob's wife, Ann, to arrange a dinner the next day. On Mother's Day, May 12, 1935, Bill W., age 39, met Dr. Bob, age 55, at Henrietta Seiberling's gatehouse. Dr. Bob was so badly hungover that he couldn't eat dinner, and he planned to stay for only 15 minutes. Privately, Bill told Dr. Bob of his alcoholism experience in the manner suggested by Dr. Silkworth. Dr. Bob then opened up, and he and Bill talked until after 11 p.m. Dr. Bob's planned 15 minutes turned into 6 hours. Bill moved to Dr. Bob's house in early June, and they all went to Oxford Group meetings at the home of T. Henry and Clarice Williams. In his Big Book story, Dr. Bob briefly describes his three-day binge at an AMA convention in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Upon his return to Akron, Bill W. helped him through a three-day sobering-up period to get ready for a scheduled surgery. Dr. Bob had his last drink on the day of the surgery, and he gives the date as June 10th. 1935. AA also marks this date as the beginning of the AA Fellowship. The books AA Comes of Age, Dr. Bob and Good Old Timers, and Pass It On all erroneously state that the AMA convention began the first week of June 1935. The AMA archives has long ago confirmed that the convention began in the second week of June 1935 on June 10th, allowing for 3+ days of binging and blacking out in New Jersey, followed by 3 days of sobering up in Ohio. Dr. Bob's sober date appears to actually be June 17th and not June 10th. In late June, Dr. Bob and Bill W. visited Bill D. at the City Hospital of Akron. Bill D., who would become AA number 3, was a prominent attorney and had been hospitalized 8 times in 1935 for his drinking. On July 4th, he checked out of the hospital, never to drink again. Akron's group number 1, which is AA's first group, marks its beginning as the date Bill D. left the hospital. Bill W. left Akron and returned to New York City in August 1935. He focused his efforts on getting the New York group established. They met at Bill's home on Clinton Street, which also became a halfway house of sorts. Abby T. came to live there in November. In late 1935, Hank P., whose big book story is The Unbeliever, and Fitz M., whose big book story is Our Southern Friend, sobered up at Towns Hospital with Bill's help. Hank and Fitz joined with Bill, and in the following years, Hank started AA in New Jersey and also had a major role in the development of the big book. Fitz M. started AA in Washington, D.C., and helped start AA in Baltimore, Maryland. In April 1937, Ebby T. got drunk after 2.5 years of sobriety, and it began an on-again, off-again pattern of drinking that would stay with Ebby. In their early years, the Akron and New York groups were affiliated with the Oxford group. It was helpful at first, but over time it created problems. In August 1937, Bill W. and Lois stopped attending Oxford group meetings, and the New York AA separated from the Oxford group. And this was the beginning of AA separating itself from outside affiliation. It set the groundwork for what would later become Tradition 6. The Akron group remained affiliated with the Oxford group for 2 more years. Dr. Bob and Bill W. met again in Akron in late 1937. There were 2 groups then and about 40 sober members, and more than half were sober for over a year. And this was actually a remarkable success story, since all the sober members had previously been considered hopeless and beyond any help at all. Bill had ideas for a chain of AA hospitals, paid missionaries, and a book of experience to carry the message to distant places. Dr. Bob liked the book idea, but not the hospitals and paid missionaries. In a meeting of the Akron group at T. Henry Williams' home, Bill's ideas narrowly passed by a single vote. The New York group was more enthusiastic. This historic milestone marked the decision to write the big book. The book project's first challenge was financing, and it was no simple matter. The country was still in the grips of the Great Economic Depression, and the prospects of World War II were looming large overseas. Early efforts to raise funds were not successful. Bill W.'s brother-in-law, Dr. Leonard B. Strong, arranged a meeting in December 1937 with Willard S. Richardson, an ordained minister and manager of John D. Rockefeller's Philanthropies. A second meeting took place in January 1938. In February 1938, Willard Richardson asked Frank Amos to visit Akron, Ohio, and make a report on the Small Fellowship of Alcoholics. His report was very detailed and exceptionally favorable. Richardson sent Amos's report to John D. Rockefeller, Jr., urging a donation of $5,000 a year for 1 or possibly 2 years, and that would be the equivalent of $76,000 a year in today's dollars. On March 17, 1938, Rockefeller replied that it was contrary to the policy of his philanthropies to fully fund a charitable enterprise unless it was decided to carry it indefinitely. Rockefeller declined to make a donation for the second year, but he provided $5,000 to be held in a fund in the Riverside Church Treasury. Much of the fund was used to immediately assist Dr. Bob by paying off the mortgage to his home. The remainder was used to provide Bill and Dr. Bob with $120 a month, and that would be the equivalent of $1,800 a month today, so that they could continue to dedicate themselves full-time to the fellowship. In April 1938, the writing of the big book began at Honors Dealer, 17 William Street, Newark, New Jersey. It was the business office of New York member Hank P. Bill W. wrote draft outlines on legal pads, and he dictated the expanded text to Ruth Hawk, who was then the honors dealer's secretary. Each week, he would read the drafts to those who met at his home. Edited copies were sent to Dr. Bob for further review and editing by the Akron members. As they worked their way through the chapters, New York and Akron members also wrote the personal stories to be included in the book. In the spring of 1938, Bill W. wrote to Dr. Bob that he had drafted the chapters There Is a Solution and Bill's Story. Dr. Bob's wife, Ann, was invited to write the chapter portraying the wife of an alcoholic, but she declined. As it turned out, the chapter Two Wives was written by Bill, much to the dismay of his wife, Lois. Bill informed Dr. Bob that nearly everyone in New York favored the title Alcoholics Anonymous, and this was almost a year prior to the book's publication. On July 18, 1938, Dr. Esther L. Richards wrote a very favorable letter to Bill W. regarding a two-chapter book prospectus sent to her for review. She suggested getting a, quote, number one physician in the alcoholism field to write an introduction. Shortly after, Dr. William D. Silkworth wrote a July 27, 1938 letter of support for use in fundraising for the book. It was incorporated into the chapter, The Doctor's Opinion, together with extracts from a paper he wrote that was published in the Lancet Medical Journal in July 1939. Dr. Silkworth's name was not added to The Doctor's Opinion until publication of the second edition in 1955. On August 5, 1938, the Alcoholic Foundation was formed as a charitable trust to provide safekeeping of funds. The idea for its creation came from Willard S. Richardson. The trust indenture document specified that non-alcoholic trustees were to make up a majority of the board. The terms Class A and Class B trustees were used to make a distinction between non-alcoholic and alcoholic board members. The foundation had a tiny one-room borrowed office with one borrowed non-alcoholic secretary by the name of Ruth Hogg. The foundation and office would eventually come to be known as the General Service Board and General Service Office. Ruth Hawk would later become AA's first national secretary. In September 1938, Board Trustee Frank Amos arranged a meeting between Bill W. and Eugene Exman, who was the religion editor of Harper Brothers Publishers. Exman offered Bill a $1,500 advance, and that would be the equivalent of $23,000 today, on the rights to the book. The Alcoholic Foundation Board urged acceptance of the offer, but Bill wanted ownership of the book to stay within the fellowship. Based on a recommendation from Eugene Exman, Hank P. persuaded Bill to form Works Publishing Company and sell stock at $25 par value, and that would be the equivalent of $380 a share today. 600 shares were issued, and Hank and Bill received 200 shares each, and 200 shares were sold to others. The newly formed Works Publishing Company would later come to be known as AA World Services, or AAWS. Prior to publication of the Big Book, there were two groups in Akron and New York. The recovery program consisted of six steps passed on to new members by word of mouth. The lack of any written material resulted in widely varying versions depending upon who was doing the passing on. Different versions of the six steps can be found in the books AA Comes of Age, Pass It On, and a July 1953 Grapevine article by Bill W. titled A Fragment of History, which can be found in the book The Language of the Heart. The Big Book pioneer story, He Sold Himself Short, also contains a version of the six steps recorded by Earl T., founder of AA in Chicago. Dr. Bob was Earl's sponsor, and this version reflects a more orthodox Oxford group influence that prevailed in the Midwest. It should be noted, however, that the Oxford group did not have anything that they called or considered to be steps. It was only the alcoholics in New York and Akron, or what was then called the Alcoholic Squad, that exclusively had and practiced steps as their spiritual program of recovery. In his July 1953 Grapevine article, Bill W. wrote, quote, "Though these principles were advocated according to the whim or liking of each of us, and though in Akron and Cleveland they still stuck by the Oxford group absolutes of honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love, this was the gist of our message to incoming alcoholics up to 1939, when our present 12 steps were put to paper." The 12 steps were actually first put to paper in December of 1938 at Bill's home at 182 Clinton Street in Brooklyn, New York. An approximate reconstruction of the original draft is in the book Pass It On. Bill claimed it took him about 30 minutes to do it. and words that were eventually changed are highlighted in red. Much often heated discussion on the wording of the new 12 steps continued right up to the publication of the Big Book. In a May 1955 Grapevine article titled How AA World Services Grew, Bill W. described the book writing project as one where fierce arguments over the drafts dominated the small fellowship's activities for months on end, and that over time he became much more of an umpire than an author. The book texts and stories were completed in January 1939. 400 manuscript copies were sent out for review and comments. New York member Jim B. suggested the phrases, God as we understood him, and power greater than ourselves be added to the steps in basic text. Bill W. wrote in a July 1953 Grapevine article, those expressions, as we so well know today, prove lifesavers for many an alcoholic. Jim B., whose big book story is The Vicious Cycle, started AA in Philadelphia, and he helped start AA in Baltimore, Maryland. The manuscript review copies were returned by March, and they produced very few changes. However, a major change did occur when a Montclair, New Jersey psychiatrist named Dr. Howard suggested toning down the use of the term you must and changing it into we ought or we should. Tom Uzel, an editor at Collier's Weekly Magazine and New York University faculty member, edited the manuscript and reduced it to around 400 pages. The cuts mainly came from the personal stories. After the editing, Bill W., Hank P., Ruth Hawk, and Dorothy S. of Cleveland drove to Cornwall, New York to deliver the heavily marked up manuscript to the Cornwall Press. The markup manuscript contained hundreds of accumulated editing changes. The manager of the Cornwall Press almost sent them back to type up a clean copy. Hank P. convinced the manager to accept the manuscript on condition that they would correct galley proofs as they came off the press. They checked into a hotel, and spent the next several days proofreading galleys. The two markup manuscript pages shown are the beginning of Chapter 5, How It Works, and many pages had handwritten notations from top to bottom. In April 1939, 4,730 copies of the first edition of Alcoholics Anonymous were published at $3.50 a copy, and that would be the equivalent of $54 a copy today. It was a very expensive book for its time. The printer, Edward Blackwell of the Cornwall Press, was told to use the thickest paper in his shop. The large, bulky volume became known as the Big Book, and the name has stuck ever since. In AA Comes of Age, Bill W. wrote that the idea behind the thick, large paper was to, quote, convince the alcoholic that he was getting his money's worth. The book had 8 Roman and 400 Arabic numbered pages. The doctor's opinion started as page 1, and the basic text ended at page 179, not 164. The foreword to the first edition contains many of the key principles that later shaped the traditions and the AA preamble. The brightly colored dust jacket on the left is called the circus color dust jacket. It was designed by Ray C., who also designed an Art Deco style shown on the right that was never used. Ray C.'s big book story is an artist concept. He began it with a quotation that he attributed to Herbert Spencer, which said, there is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. And that principle is contempt prior to investigation. Ray C.'s story was not included in the second edition Big Book, and the quotation was added to Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience, in the third printing of the second edition in 1959. The attribution of the quote to Spencer is in error. It should be attributed to an English clergyman, author, and college lecturer by the name of William Paley, who lived from 1743 to 1805. Herbert Spencer, who lived from 1820 to 1903, was a great rival of his fellow Englishman, Charles Darwin, who was credited with the theory of evolution. However, it was Spencer, not Darwin, who popularized the term evolution and coined the term survival of the fittest. But Spencer did not author the quotation attributed to him in the Big Book. On May 10, 1939, the Cleveland members, led by pioneer member Clarence S., whose Big Book story is Home Brewmeister, announced that they would meet separately from Akron. Their first meeting was at the home of Abby G., whose Big Book story is He Thought He Could Drink Like a Gentleman. After almost 4 years, this was AA's third group. In the late 1930s and early 1940s, public relations had the most dramatic impact on AA growth. A September 1939 Liberty Magazine article titled Alcoholics and God by Morris Markey caused many inquiries to be made to the New York office. In October 1939, the Cleveland Plain Dealer carried a series of editorials by Elric B. Davis. The result was spectacular, and the Cleveland group was flooded with appeals for help. Cleveland membership surged from 20 to over several hundred. Newcomers with just a few days of sobriety were assigned to make 12-step calls. The story of AA in Texas began in Cleveland in late 1939. A newspaperman, Larry J., age 40, all of 100 pounds, was found in freezing weather, blind drunk with no coat, a lung collapse from tuberculosis, and near death. Larry slowly recovered at a Cleveland hospital from DTs, malnutrition, and exposure. Cleveland AA members visited him regularly and took care of him. Physicians told Larry that because of his tuberculosis, he would be healthier in a warm climate. Larry, who had never attended an AA meeting, boarded a train to live and work in Houston with nothing more than a big book. He had a spiritual awakening on the train while reading it. Dorothy S. of Cleveland wrote to AA's National Secretary, Ruth Hawk, on January 19, 1940, describing Larry as a brilliant newspaperman and completely down and out owing to John Barleycorn. She asked Ruth to provide help to Larry in starting a group in Houston. Upon arriving in Houston, Larry J. sought out Alan C. Bartlett, the editor of the Houston Press. At first, Bartlett refused to see him since Larry's reputation as an alcoholic newspaperman had preceded him. Bartlett was persuaded to give Larry 5 minutes of his time as long as Larry promised not to ask him for a job. 5 minutes stretched into 2 hours, and Larry persuaded Bartlett to run a series of articles on AA, which he wrote with an anonymous byline. The articles were extremely well written, and they generated much favorable publicity for AA. The articles were published in January and February, and soon after, Larry J. was joined by Roy Y. and later Ed H. The articles also attracted the first Texas woman AA member, Benita C., who later married Larry J. And this began the first AA group in Texas. Their first meeting was on March 15, 1940, at the Houston YMCA. They met on Tuesdays with as many as 25 attending, but offering a different 25 each time. The Houston Press articles led many to inquire about AA, and Alan C. Bartlett was so impressed with the articles that he hired Larry J. as an editorial writer. However, among all this joy, there was also later to be sorrow. As a fair number of AA pioneers did, Larry J. returned to drinking in 1943, and it led to his death in 1944. On February 8, 1940, John D. Rockefeller, Jr. held a dinner for AA at the Union League Club in New York City. Nelson Rockefeller hosted in the absence of his ill father. It produced much favorable national publicity and raised $2,200, or the equivalent of $33,000 today, from the attendees, and almost half of that came from Rockefeller. Rockefeller and several dinner guests continued to contribute to AA up to 1945, when they were asked to stop. In April 1940, the Alcoholic Foundation office moved from 17 William Street in Newark, New Jersey, to 30 Vesey Street in New York City, and Ruth Hawk became AA's first national secretary. Most of the draft yellow pages and manuscript drafts of the Big Book were discarded before the move. A very difficult loss to AA's archives was the draft of the initial version of the 12 steps. In May, Hank P., who had objected violently to the move, got drunk after 4 years of sobriety. In May 1940, Works Publishing Company was legally incorporated as a publishing arm of the Alcoholic Foundation. Bill W. gave up his stock with a stipulation that Dr. Bob and Ann would receive 10% royalties on the Big Book for life. Hank P. was persuaded to give up his shares as well. Hank is credited in a number of sources, including the book Pass It On, with writing the Big Book's Chapter 10 to employers. Ruth Hawk later wrote, "If it wasn't for Bill W., the Big Book would never have been written. And if it wasn't for Hank P., it would never have been published." A publication called the AA Bulletin was first mailed to groups by the New York office on November 14, 1940. It was intended to inform groups of important events. The bulletin listed a number of cities categorized according to the types of pins or stars used to show them on a map in the office. 22 cities were classified as White Star, having well-established groups. and five cities were classified as Red Star, having several members who were just beginning, and four cities were listed as Green Star, having isolated members. Almost 5.5 years after its founding, AA had been brought to a total of 31 cities in the United States. On January 14, 1941, Ruth Hawk sent out AA Bulletin No. 2, noting that AA was beginning in five more cities and that there was some activity in Vancouver, Canada. The bulletin also had a flash lead item that the Saturday Evening Post would be publishing an article on AA by Jack Alexander, and that there would likely be numerous inquiries in response to the article. Jack Alexander's Saturday Evening Post article was published on March 1, 1941, to a readership of over 3 million. Its impact on AA growth was enormous. It was AA's most notable public relations blessing. During 1941, AA membership surged from 2,000 to over 8,000, and reprints of the article became a favorite pamphlet, and it is still reprinted to this day. Alexander later served as a Class A board trustee from 1951 to 1956. Over 6,000 inquiries were sent to the New York office during 1941 because of the Post article. The New York office asked the groups for donations of $1, or the equivalent of $14 today, per member per year for support for extra staff to respond to all the appeals for help. And this began the practice of financing what is today called the General Service Office from group and member donations. In its early years, the New York office was called either the headquarters or central office or general office. It provided a central mailing to members attempting to start groups and helping them with growing pains. Over time, the accumulated letters sent in by the groups gave firm signals of a need for guidelines to help with group problems that occurred over and over. Basic ideas for the traditions came from these letters and the principles defined in the foreword to the first edition Big Book. In March 1941, 2 years after the first printing, the wording of Step 12 was changed in the second printing of the Big Book. The term spiritual experience was changed to spiritual awakening, and the term as the result of these steps was changed to as the result of those steps. An appendix titled Spiritual Experience was added. Many members thought that they had to have a sudden, spectacular spiritual experience, similar to the one that Bill had in Towns Hospital. The appendix emphasized that most spiritual experiences developed slowly over time and were of the educational variety. Ruth Hawk sent out AA Bulletin No. 3 on June 30, 1941, announcing that over 4,400 letters had been answered in the 3 months since the Saturday Evening Post article was published. Correspondence was being maintained with 116 cities, and that's almost three times the number that was announced in January. At the end of the bulletin, Ruth reported on the discovery of a prayer that we today call the Serenity Prayer. The office later printed it on small cards, which they included in outgoing mail. For years within AA, it was called the AA Prayer instead of the Serenity Prayer. The prayer is attributed to Reinhold Niebuhr, whose version differs somewhat from the popular version. On December 31, 1941, the New York office distributed a four-page census of 146 known cities where AA had been established. The cities were classified, again, according to the color of pins or stars used to show them on a map in the office. 69 cities were classified as White Star, having well-established groups. 43 cities were classified as Red Star, having several members who were just beginning, and 34 cities were listed as Green Star, having isolated members. Among the 69 cities having well-established groups were Houston and Fort Worth. Houston had 85 members and Fort Worth 12. Among the 43 Red Star cities of several members just beginning were Dallas and San Antonio. And finally, among the 34 Green Star cities consisting of isolated AA members was the city of El Paso. Ruth Hawk left the New York office to marry on February 28, 1942, and Margaret Bobby B. took her place as national secretary. In 1942, A. Leroy Chipman asked John D. Rockefeller, Jr. and the 1940 dinner guest for a loan of $8,500, and that would be the equivalent of $112,000 today, to buy back the remaining outstanding shares of Works Publishing stock. Rockefeller lent $4,000, his son Nelson $500, and the other dinner guests $4,000. By acquiring all the outstanding shares, it ensured that complete ownership of the Big Book would be held in trust for the entire AA Fellowship. Communications to and from groups was greatly aided by the publication of two newsletters, the Cleveland Central Bulletin and the AA Grapevine. The Central Bulletin began publication in October 1942 and the Grapevine in June 1944. The Grapevine became AA's official magazine and played a critical role in the development of the traditions and the General Service Conference. Both publications provide a significant amount of early group and fellowship history. On February 12, 1945, the New York office sent a letter to the groups notifying them that because of paper rationing needs for the war effort, the War Production Board reduced the weight of the paper to be used for the big book. Wartime rationing reductions in paper also caused the New York office to sharply cut the overall size of the book by trimming margins to a minimum. And there are two wartime big book editions printed in limited quantity, and they are very rare editions. By the mid-1940s, the letter sent to the New York office by groups and members led to reliable conclusions on what practices worked well and those that didn't. Groups were also asked to send in all their membership rules, and it provided quite a shock. If all the membership rules were applied everywhere, it would be impossible for any alcoholic to join AA. In April 1945, Earl T., founder of AA in Chicago, suggested to Bill W. that the experiences sent in from group and member letters might be codified into a set of principles to offer tested solutions to avoid future problems. Earl had a major role in the development of traditions, both the long and the short forms. The ending of World War II and demobilization marked a period of rapid growth in AA as members of the armed forces returned to the United States and civilian life. Bill W. wrote in AA Comes of Age that the period from 1945 to 1950 was one of immense strain and test. The three main issues were money, anonymity, and what was to become of AA when its old-timers and founders were gone. Bill began his most intense and exhaustive work of forming the traditions and creating a service structure to carry on after he and Dr. Bob were gone. The August 1945 Grapevine carried Bill's first traditions essay titled Modesty, One Plank for Good Public Relations, and it began his five-year campaign for the traditions and the General Service Conference. In 1945, the Alcoholic Foundation Board wrote to John D. Rockefeller, Jr. and the 1940 dinner guests that their financial help was no longer needed. Big Book royalties could look after Dr. Bob and Bill, and group contributions could pay the office expenses. If these were insufficient, a reserve accumulated from literature sales could meet the deficit. Rockefeller and the dinner guests donated a total of $30,700, and that would be the equivalent of $345,000 today. The donations were viewed as loans, and they were paid back out of Big Book income. And this finally led to the principle of being fully self-supporting, declining all further outside contributions, and later formed the basis of Tradition 7. In April 1946, the Grapevine was incorporated as the second publishing arm of the Alcoholic Foundation. The April Grapevine issue carried Bill W.'s essay titled 12 Suggested Points for AA Tradition. They later came to be called the long form of the traditions. Bill started to fill out the board and members on the idea of representatives from various geographical areas coming together as an elected service conference. The board and Dr. Bob were not very enthusiastic about the idea. In June 1948, Dr. Bob was diagnosed with terminal cancer. He closed his office and retired from practice, and in his last year, he fulfilled a lifelong dream of obtaining a convertible automobile. It was a Buick Roadmaster. Bill W. was spurred into greater urgency as Dr. Bob's illness progressed, and he pressed harder for a General Service Conference to take the place of the AA founders. And it resulted in some very hot debates, and a serious rift developed between Bill and the Class B trustees over what they call Bill's, quote, sledgehammer tactics. In AA Comes of Age, Bill admits to writing a sizzling memo that nearly blew the Alcoholic Foundation apart. It caused four trustees to submit letters of resignation. Bill wrote to each of them a letter of apology, and the resignations were either withdrawn or not accepted at the next board meeting. In a July 1949 letter to the Reverend Sam Shoemaker, Bill W. wrote, quote, so far as I am concerned, and Dr. Smith too, the Oxford Group seated AA. It was our spiritual wellspring at the beginning. Bill later expressed regret that he did not write to Frank Bookman as well. In AA Comes of Age, Bill wrote, quote, Early AA got its ideas of self-examination, acknowledgement of character defects, restitution for harm done, and working with others straight from the Oxford groups and directly from Sam Shoemaker, their former leader in America, and from nowhere else. Earl T. of Chicago suggested to Bill W. that the 12 suggested points for AA tradition would benefit from revision and shortening. Bill, with Earl's help, developed the short form of the traditions, which were first published in the centerfold of the November 1949 Grapevine. When the 12 and 12 was published in 1953, two wording changes were made to the 1949 version. The term primary spiritual aim in Tradition 6 was changed to primary purpose, and the term principles above personalities in Tradition 12 was changed to principles before personalities. On Friday, July 28, 1950, AA's first international convention opened in Cleveland with approximately 3,000 people in attendance. Bill W. chronicled the proceedings in a September 1950 Grapevine article titled We Come of Age, which can be found in the book The Language of the Heart. This was the only international convention attended by Dr. Bob, who was very determined to be there despite the progression of his terminal cancer. The program of the Cleveland International consisted of a series of meetings held from Friday through Sunday at various hotels. The Cleveland Auditorium Music Hall was reserved for Saturday afternoon to offer the traditions for approval. Contrary to popular belief, the short form of the traditions was not approved at the 1950 convention. What was approved by the attendees was quite different than both the long and short forms of the traditions we know today. Following talks on the traditions by six members, Bill W. was asked to sum up the traditions for the attendees, and he did so by paraphrasing a variation of the traditions that's shown in the slide and which can be found in the book The Language of the Heart. Notably missing from what Bill recited were the principles embodied in Tradition 10 regarding outside issues and public controversy. Nevertheless, the traditions as recited by Bill were approved unanimously. On July 30, 1950, a gravely ill Dr. Bob made a brief appearance for what would be his last talk. In the fall of 1950, Bill W. visited Dr. Bob in Akron, Ohio for their last visit together. Bill informed Dr. Bob that the board would soon give its consent to a multi-year trial period for the General Service Conference. Dr. Bob gave Bill his endorsement as well. His final words to Bill were, quote, "Let's keep it simple." Dr. Bob passed away on November 16, 1950. In his 15 years of sobriety, he helped more than 5,000 alcoholics, and he never took any fee for his professional services. In his eulogy, Bill W. described Dr. Bob as the Prince of the 12-Steppers. Dr. Bob served as a Class B trustee on the Alcoholic Foundation Board from its inception in 1938 up to 1944, and again from 1949 to the time of his death. Class A board trustees Leonard Harrison and Bernard B. Smith resolved a five-year conflict between Bill W. and the board on having a general service conference. Smith, who Bill would later call the architect of the service structure, chaired a trustees committee that recommended that conferences be held on an experimental basis from 1951 to 54, and that in 1955 it would be evaluated and a final decision made. On April 20, 1951, 37 United States and Canadian delegates, half the planned number, convened at the Commodore Hotel in New York City as the first panel of the General Service Conference. Panel 1 delegates from Texas were Olin L. from Dallas and Icky S. from Houston. Icky later moved to Dallas, and he became the first Class B trustee from Texas in 1955. The conference unanimously approved several advisory actions, among them that AA literature should be conference approved. On April 23, 1952, Panel 2, consisting of 38 additional delegates, joined with Panel 1 for the first conference of all delegates attending. Texas Panel 2 delegates were Robert S. from Lubbock and Roy G. from Austin. Based on the 1951 advisory action on a conference-approved literature, the board formed a trustees committee to recommend literature items that should be retained and future literature items that would be needed. Bill W. also reported on his literature projects. One of them involved the updating of the story section of the Big Book to provide a more truly representative cross-section of AA recovery stories. The board's proposals and Bill's projects were unanimously approved. There are not specific advisory actions, but by approving existing literature to be retained, the conference retroactively approved the Big Book and the long form of the traditions. Board Chairman Bernard B. Smith reported to the 1953 conference that the corporate name of Works Publishing had been changed to Alcoholics Anonymous Publishing. The first conference-approved book to be distributed under the new publishing name was The 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, and it contains the final wording of the short form of the traditions as we know them today. In 1953, a New York member collaborated with Panel 1 delegate Olin L. of Dallas to take Ebby T. to Texas for treatment at a clinic run by Searcy W. After some early troubles, Ebby found sobriety in Texas, and he stayed for 8 years. And this was Ebby's longest period of sobriety. In 1954, Ralph J. and his wife Mary Lee invited Ebby for a lengthy stay at their sheep ranch near Ozona. Panel 1 conference delegates Olin L. and A.K. S. virtually adopted Ebby, and Searcy W. became Ebby's Texas sponsor. The 1955 General Service Conference convened in St. Louis, Missouri on June 26 to 29th, and again on July 3rd. 75 delegates unanimously recommended adoption of a permanent conference charter subject to the approval of the Second International Convention that would convene in St. Louis on July 1st. The final conference session was scheduled to be held on the afternoon of July 3rd in conjunction with the International Convention. AA's 20th anniversary and Second International Convention was held at St. Louis's Kiel Auditorium from July 1st to 3rd. Estimated attendance was 3,800, and its theme was coming of age. The 2 p.m. Sunday afternoon meeting was designated as the last session of the General Service Conference. It's the only time in the history of the conference that it has been open to the participation of AA members. At the invitation of Chairman Bernard B. Smith, Bill W. presented a resolution to the attendees, the heart of which read, "Be it therefore resolved that the General Service Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous should become, as of this date, July 3, 1955, the guardian of the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, the perpetuator of the world services of our society, the voice of the group conscience of our entire fellowship, and the sole successors to its co-founders, Dr. Bob and Bill." The resolution was unanimously approved. The second edition Big Book was introduced at the 1955 International Convention at a retail price of $4.50, and that would be the equivalent of $35 today. It contained 30 new personal stories. Bill W. renumbered the pages of the second edition so that page one began with Bill's story instead of the doctor's opinion. It's not known why he did this, but there has been some very creative and entertaining speculation on the matter. The December 1955 Grapevine carried a painting by volunteer illustrator Robert M. of a man on a bed being 12-stepped by two members. The painting's title originally was Came to Believe. In 1973, when the book Came to Believe was published, Grapevine editors changed the painting's name to The Man on the Bed to avoid confusion. It is probably the most popular image in AA today. In 1956, the wording of Step 12 changed again in the second printing of the second edition Big Book. The term as the result of those steps was restored to its original form as the result of these steps. AA's popular slogan plaques were first published in five Grapevine issues from September to December 1956 and February 1957. Four slogans are from the Big Book. But for the Grace of God is from the chapter There Is a Solution. Easy Does It, First Things First, and Live and Let Live are from the chapter The Family Afterward. Live and Let Live can also be found in the chapter To Wives. The slogan Think, Think, Think is a bit of a mystery. Some say it originated in Cleveland, Ohio in the mid-1940s. However, its actual source is unknown. In 1962, conference unanimously approved Bill W.'s manuscript titled 12 Concepts for World Service. With the publication of this book, all the spiritual principles of AA's three legacies of recovery, unity, and service were defined and explained in detail. On March 21, 1966, Ebby T. died of emphysema. Some believe that he died drunk, and it's not true. He was 2.5 years sober when he passed away. Bill W. loyally referred to Ebby as his sponsor throughout his life. The United States copyright to the first edition Big Book expired in April 1967 and was not renewed. It was not discovered until 1985, when it was also discovered that the copyright for the second edition had lapsed in 1983. It should be noted, however, that the Big Book copyright has expired only in the United States. It is still in force outside the United States under international treaty agreements. Over 10,000 attendees from 50 states and 27 countries met in the Miami, Florida Convention Hall in July 1970 for AA's 5th International Convention and 35th anniversary. The convention theme was unity, and Bill W. appeared on Sunday morning for what would be his last public appearance. His health had severely weakened due to emphysema. He was confined to a wheelchair and required the administration of oxygen. On January 24, 1971, William Griffith Wilson, age 75, co-founder of AA and 36 years sober, died at the Miami Heart Institute in Miami Beach, Florida. The date was also Bill and Lois's 53rd wedding anniversary. Bill W. was the architect and author of AA's three legacies of recovery, unity, and service, and all the written works that explain them. And this was an amazing achievement because he had no training at all as a writer. In 1990, Life magazine named Bill W. as one of the 100 most important Americans of the 20th century. Similarly, in 1999, Time magazine named Bill W. as one of the 100 international heroes and icons of the 20th century. 3 months after Bill W.'s death, the 1971 General Service Conference approved the short form of the 12 Concepts for World Service. The 1976 conference approved publication of the third edition Big Book. The conference also expanded the provisions of Article 3 of the Permanent Conference Charter so that any changes to the steps, traditions, or warranties would require written approval of 75% of the registered AA groups known to General Service offices around the world. This conference advisory action effectively makes any proposed change to the steps, traditions, and warranties a virtual impossibility, even so much as adding or removing a comma. Some members erroneously believe that this restriction also applies to making changes to the basic text of the Big Book. It does not. In the remaining time and remaining slides, I'm going to try to sum up the key role of the Big Book in AA history and why I believe it enjoys and deserves so much historical respect and admiration from the AA membership. AA's historic 1955 International Convention in St. Louis introduced a new circle and triangle symbol that was prominently displayed on a large banner draping the back of the stage. In AA Comes of Age, Bill W. described the circle as representing the whole of AA. The triangle represented AA's three legacies of recovery, unity, and service. Each of AA's three legacies has a foundation of 12 spiritual principles. They are the 12 steps for the legacy of recovery, the 12 traditions for the legacy of unity, and the 12 concepts for the legacy of service. There's an old saying that hindsight is 20/20, and history is hindsight, particularly in searching for cause and effect. The common root action that caused the written evolution of the three legacies of AA very likely took place in October 1937. It was a group conscience decision by the Akron and New York groups to permit the writing of a book of experience that later came to be fondly known in AA as the Big Book. The book's contents explains the 12 steps in AA's legacy of recovery. The foreword to the first edition defines many of the key principles that were later absorbed into the 12 traditions in AA's legacy of unity. And finally, the service structure that was needed to produce and distribute the book and manage the public relations and funds related to book sales provided much of the experience and organization that later helped shape the 12 concepts in AA's legacy of service. The origin and development of the Big Book is singularly unique. As AA's first piece of literature, every AA member at the time of its writing had an opportunity to individually and directly contribute to its wording, and probably did. This is true of no other piece of AA literature. The Big Book has a remarkable history of carrying the message of recovery throughout the world in the 20th and 21st centuries. 300,000 copies of the first edition were distributed from 1939 to 1955. 1,150,000 copies of the second edition were distributed from 1955 to 1976. And 19,550,000 copies of the third edition were distributed from 1976 to 2002. The major historical milestone for AA in the first decade of the 21st century was the 2001 conference approval and publication of the fourth edition Big Book. By 2007, Big Book distribution had reached the 28 million mark and has long exceeded the 30 million mark, and that's just the English language version. The fourth edition introduced a new appendix containing the short form of the 12 concepts for world service. The big book now contains all the spiritual principles of AA's three legacies of recovery, unity, and service. Contrary to popular belief, a number of wording changes have been made to the basic text over the years. The 2006 General Service Conference approved a change to the preface of the fourth edition so that it reads, quote, "Therefore, the first part of this volume describing the AA recovery program has been left largely untouched in the course of revisions made for the second, third, and fourth editions." The word "largely" was added to correct the erroneous impression that the basic text had not been changed over the prior editions. The major changes to the Big Book editions have been in the selection of personal stories so that they represent a good cross-section of the AA membership. 29 stories were included in the first edition to reflect the 1939 United States membership of around 100. 37 stories were included in the second edition to reflect a 1955 worldwide membership of around 136,000. 43 stories were included in the third edition to reflect a 1976 worldwide membership of around 321,000. 42 stories were included in the fourth edition to reflect a 2001 worldwide membership of over 2 million. In 2003, the book Experience, Strength, and Hope was published, and it contains 56 stories that were previously published in the first three editions and later replaced. So to sum up, AA's history began with a five-month sober and still shaky stockbroker from New York who had his last drink, a beer, in December of 1934. While on a failed business trip to Akron, Ohio, he met an alcoholic surgeon who desperately wanted to stop drinking, and he had his last drink, also a beer, in June 1935. It's probably safe to say that when AA's co-founders met, they had no idea at all of the fellowship of alcoholics that would evolve from their humble meeting and how that fellowship would save the lives of millions of alcoholics over the next seven decades. Their legacies of today are described as recovery, unity, and service. They were our gifts to freely receive, and it is our duty to freely give them away. And it's been a remarkable journey down the road of happy destiny. That concludes the presentation. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you much for the privilege to present it. Thank you.